Are you a sports entertainment fan? Just in time for the holidays, get the hottest item around. It's your very own Talking Solid Monster.
I turned the show off. I was so thoroughly disgusted.
Just pull the string and hear the Talking Solid Monster's words of wisdom.
And there's Delusional Dixie at it again.
The perfect companion while watching wrestling with the kids.
I like the fact that John Cena wasn't around. Fuck the kids. I don't care about the kids. I don't have any kids. The whole brim is a hairy beard. Who the fuck would wear this?
With the interactive feature, the Talking Solid Monster will read tweets and offer insightful comments.
I should be the general manager of WWE's Saturday Morning Slam. Dude, you'll be lucky to be general manager of a Burger King if you keep whining like this.
Don't forget the Talking Solid Monster's dead-on impressions, like Jeff Hardy.
Willow is being beaten down by the metal object because Willow sucks!
And Stephanie McMahon.
Don't beat up my dad! Don't beat up our kid's grandfather! Please, please, Hunter!
Turn on the WWE Network and relive classic Hulk Hogan moments with the Talking Solid Monster.
How much for the plastic surgery, Mean Gene? When I turned around, they were identical, identical!
Act now, and for a limited time, we'll throw in a talking Jerry the King Lawler. Order by Friday and receive a special pre-sale code for the spring limited edition Talking Swiss Solid Monster.
Hello! I mean, I love Lola, but Christ, can we please switch up the announcing on this show? Please, somebody do something.
Order today at thesolidmonster.com.
Who gives a flying fuck? Who has the power on any wrestling show?
These are not real products, but they should be.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
My thanks to Noah Mark for his help putting that wonderful intro together. You know, I think if we really did make those dolls, I can make a killing. I can make a killing on those dolls. This is episode 357 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off podcast here for Sunday, November 30th, 2014. I think it's 357. I've done so many shows this week, I don't even know what way is up and which way is down. This is episode 357, I think, right? I hope so. This is the second of two shows this weekend. Technically, my fourth show this week, if you count the two Sound Off extra videos I did on our YouTube channel. That's a lot of audio. That's a lot of work. So thank you to everybody who has posted positive comments, donated, bought a shirt. It's what makes it all worthwhile. I have posted Sound Off episode 356, which was dedicated entirely to covering CM Punk's tell-all interview on Colt Cabana's podcast on our official YouTube channel. It went up this morning, youtube.com/thesolidmonster. Go over there and subscribe. I don't usually post full episodes of the Sound Off on there, but there's been a lot of demand for the CM Punk stuff. There's a lot of interest in it. Good opportunity for anybody who has not listened to an episode of the Sound Off before to check it out for the first time. So by all means, please share with friends, other people, other wrestling fans you may know who may not be aware of the podcast. I think it would be a good introduction to the show. And it's everything and anything you want to know about the CM Punk WWE situation stemming from the interview he did with Cabana that dropped on Thanksgiving Day. So definitely share that with whoever you think may be interested. And show some love for the show on there as well. It's up on the YouTube channel right now. There will be no Punk talk on today's show. I've said everything I feel compelled to say on the subject. So if that's what you're most interested in, then by all means, 356 is the show for you. Before we move on here, I just have to mention something really sad that was brought to my attention by another one of our listeners a few days ago, and that is that one of our listeners, Bill Hoyler, unbeknownst to me, passed away several months ago. And I don't know how many of you may remember the name. He was on Twitter at PanCancerFighter, fighter without the E. Bill had fought the good fight against pancreatic cancer for 7 years. This guy went through hell for 7 years. And I mentioned him on Sound Off episode 318. He had a You Caring page that was up trying to raise some money. Gave him a quick plug for it on the Sound Off and tried to you know, give him some words of inspiration, let him know that everybody was rooting for him. And I know that was a big deal to him. I was more than happy to do it, and was just bummed to find out. Apparently he passed away back on May 8th. There had been no activity on his Twitter page. I guess maybe his parents had first started posting on there again earlier this month. And again, it was brought to my attention. I found out, and I was really, really upset by that. Bill seemed like a good guy, and again, he was a big fan of the podcast, and that was just some shitty news to find out. So I dedicate this episode to Bill Hoyler. He went through hell for a long time. In the end, it didn't work out for him, but I think there's a lot to be gleaned from what he went through and the hell that he went through in 7 years. I mean, he kept going as long as he could, and I think there's a lesson in there somewhere. So, Bill, this one's for you. You can take the time to nominate the Sound Off for Show of the Year in the 2015 Wrestling Radio Awards. You go to WrestlingRadioAwards.com. You'll see two fields. Type in the full name of the podcast, Solid Monster Sounds Off, in the first field, and include our URL, thesolidmonster.com. Then in the second field, you need to vote for your favorite interview of the year. You can vote for whatever you want there. For example, I voted for Steve Austin's interview with Paul Heyman, but you could vote for Chris Jericho's interview with Triple H, his interview with Chavo Guerrero, or you could vote for my interview with Matthew of Botchamania, which got some great feedback. Whatever you want, it's up to you, but you have to fill out both fields. And the best part is you can vote daily. So vote once a day, every day. Tell your friends. Keep voting. I have no idea when the nomination period ends, but somebody brought it to my attention, and I figured, why not? Why not put our name in the hat? So, WrestlingRadioAwards.com. Let's do some PayPal shout-outs for people who have donated to the podcast this week. You can do so on thesolidmonster.com. The PayPal box is on the right-hand side. Big thank you to Yvonne Bruiser Balick, Eugene Crazy Eyes Morgan, War Machine Clay Edwards, Halen Last Laugh Lee, good old Single H, the Dapper Don Daquan, Mighty Mitchell Payne, Steve Godzilla Griffin, Adorable Atamar Garcia, Joe Armbar Armenta Jr., Stuart Thumbtack Jack, I like Thumbtack Jack, that's a cool name, Short Fuse, Sean Simpson, The Human Highlight Reel, Michael Hilliard, and Radiant Ray Wrighton, or RJ, as I know her. Thank you to all of you for making a donation to the podcast this week. I can't even talk straight. And again, you can do so on thesolidmonster.com. It is always the quickest, most direct way to show your support and make a contribution to the Sound Off, especially after a week where I was so focused on doing audio all week, I forgot to have a life. It's like this Thanksgiving week just breezed by. I know there was turkey in there somewhere. I know I watched some wrestling, and then the rest of it's just kind of a blur. So anyway, you can do that. I also want to promote the new shirt that we have up in our store on prowrestlingtees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. We have the brand new Let Me School You Son t-shirt by popular demand that a lot of people have been asking for a while. And we still have a Black Friday offer. I don't know when you are listening to this right now. There's a very small window left to take advantage of the Black Friday sale that's going on right now on ProWrestlingTees.com. You can get 20% off each shirt that you buy up until midnight the morning of Monday, December 1st. So really, there's only about, as I'm recording this, less than 12 hours left in the sale. But if you're listening to this early, you can still take advantage of it before midnight on Monday morning. Use the code Black Friday, all one word, as the discount code at checkout. You'll get 20% off the Let Me School You Son shirt, any shirt that you buy. So definitely get on that. And also, I mean, I got a lot of stuff to promote here this week, so I apologize, but we're just about done here. But I have to say this. Big thank you to everybody who has used our Audible URL to sign up and get a free audiobook. A lot of you have taken advantage of that. A lot of you have taken advantage of the Chris Jericho book, which I reviewed in one of my Sound Off extras. I did a one-hour-long review of Jericho's new book, The Best in the World at What? I Have No Idea. That's up on our YouTube channel right now. Take advantage of it. A lot of people have enjoyed the book. I like the book a lot. I highly recommend it. Whether you buy it, you can buy the hardcover in the store if you want to. But if you want the audiobook version, you can get it for free. Just go to audibletrial.com/solidmonster. Go to that URL. If you sign up for a free 30-day trial from there, as soon as you do that, you can cash in on your free audiobook by picking up Chris Jericho's book. There's, you know, Steve Austin has a book that he narrates himself. the Stone Cold Truth, whatever you're interested in, make sure you use our URL, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. I mentioned the review I did of Jericho's book. The other sound-off extra that I did, and this bleeds into the Survivor Series now, was a full Survivor Series review featuring the debut of Sting. Yes, finally, Sting has made his debut inside of a WWE ring. It was a historic night. Listen to the video. You'll get my thoughts on Survivor Series. I didn't think it was really that strong of a card, top to bottom. It really was a one-match show. It was a one-match show going in. I don't know why that would have surprised anybody. I had higher hopes for Dean Ambrose and Bray Wyatt. They had a good match. I don't think they'll have a great match until TLC. I guess they're saving it for that pay-per-view. They'll have a TLC match there. But it was a one-match show, and I thought that match knocked it out of the park. I thought that Survivor Series main event match was great. I loved that they got rid of Cena unexpectedly. That was a nice little shocker. And that Dolph Ziggler had the spotlight at least for one night, and he was the sole survivor for his team. I loved Sting's debut, how they handled it. They had new music for him. I'm a big fan of the Crow theme from WCW. I just think that's an epic piece of music that would have been great had they used it. But, the new music is fine. I mean, there's nothing terrible about it. I think people are just, well, this is the way things used to be. Why would you change it? Why not? It's WWE. What do you expect? They have to put their stamp on it. You know, it was a WCW creation, so we have to tweak it in some way. Let's give him some new music. That's just what they do. To me, it didn't ruin anything. I thought his debut was fine. He looked his age, but, he's almost 60 years old. So I think for a guy his age, he's moving around and looking pretty good. He left Triple H laying with a Scorpion Death Drop, put Dolph on top of Seth Rollins. Team WWE won. The Authority is no more, at least for now. And so I thought that really made the show. And when the show was over, I didn't feel cheated. I mean, it was free for all the new network subscribers. It wasn't free for me. I paid for that show. I paid my $9.99 for the show. And I felt I got my money's worth. I thought that was a great ending. So check out the full review on YouTube. That leads into Raw. This past Monday night, Raw, the post-Survivor Series edition, was live from Indianapolis, Indiana. No Sting. So if you were expecting him, you were left disappointed. I wasn't expecting him, and I was still left disappointed. So let's get on with it here. The Authority was banished at Survivor Series, right? They lost. So how does the first post-Authority era Raw show open? A show, by the way, where they talked about how this is a new era. It's the beginning of a new era. How does the show open? Why? With an Authority promo, of course. What else? They were given a chance to say their goodbyes. Hunter told all of us that we would regret not having them around anymore. By the end of the show, he would be proven right. Then before he could leave, out came Daniel Bryan, making a surprise return. He trolled the Authority as they tried to leave. He blocked their path. He was doing nonstop yes chants, throwing his hands up in the air. I like that. You know, if anybody deserved to be the one to give the Authority their send-off after all that they put him through, it's Daniel Bryan. So I thought that was appropriate. So that opening segment went about 15 minutes. So now Bryan stays out there. We come back from break for more talking. Bryan's in the ring for a segment that went just about as long, which meant the first half hour of Raw on Monday night was nothing but talking and commercials. Talking and commercials. What a combo. And I like Daniel Bryan. I thought he looked as comfortable here on the microphone as I've ever seen him, because he could be awkward on the mic. He's not the best promo. But I thought it was the most comfortable I've ever seen him for a long promo segment. He just looked genuinely happy to be there. I'm sure he was. He's been out for so long. But this just went on forever. Forever this segment went on for. He said that John Cena had picked him to be the general manager for the night, or maybe the board of directors did. Again, they don't know what the fuck they're doing. I think earlier in the day, maybe on .com or on the pre-show or something, they actually said that John Cena picked him. Then they changed their minds, and then it was the board of directors. Somebody picked Daniel Bryan to be in charge for that night. Think of all the time that is wasted on these shows every single week on the Authority figure or general manager segments where they just talk about making matches and making decisions. It's got to be half the show. It's got to be. Which just proves my point, by the way, that Raw does not need an Authority figure. It does not need a general manager. But they insist on having them. So he brings out Team Authority. the losers from the night before. And he goes down the line one by one, starting with Seth Rollins. He puts Rollins in a 3-on-2 handicap match. Advantage Rollins, by the way. 3-on-2 handicap match against John Cena and Dolph Ziggler later in the show. So he gives Rollins the man advantage, but he says that the WWE Universe will vote on who his tag team partners will be. They push people to vote for Jamie Noble and Joey Mercury, or J&J Security as they called them. So off they went. Then it was time for Kane to learn his fate. He is no longer the director of operations. Instead, he is now the director of food and beverage. Concessions Kane, he called him. And some dude walked out on stage to hand Kane a tray of food to take with him, which Mark Henry looked like he was eyeballing. Up next was Rusev and Lana. Brian said he had two choices. One, Rusev could defend his U.S. title in a battle royal against every member of the Raw roster. Actually, I think he said every member of the roster. There is no Raw roster anymore. I keep having to remind myself of that. Or he could stand in the ring in front of the American flag and recite the Pledge of Allegiance. So he stormed off to make his mind up. Then it was Luke Harper. He would defend his Intercontinental title against Dean Ambrose. All of the champions, by the way, are heels right now. First time that's happened in a while. I'm sure it's happened before. I just can't remember when. And finally, Brian told Mark Henry that he would be wrestling a man that wanted to avenge his loss at WrestleMania 2 years ago, the Ryback. That's what Brian's always called him, going back to when they were travel buddies. The Ryback, who's been actually in the news quite a bit this week. Listen to episode 356 if you want to learn more about that. And he said, that match is right now. And out came Ryback to attack Mark Henry from behind. Match went 60 seconds once they actually rang the bell. Ryback gave him a spinebuster and a meat hook clothesline and pinned him. And that was it. Ryback was not nearly as over here as he should have been. But, you know, how surprising really is that, given how quickly he was dumped at the pay-per-view? He was the second person eliminated. In a lot of ways, it's just as bad as being the first, because Mark Henry got dumped in the first 30 seconds of that match. He got knocked out by Big Show and pinned. So then the match finally gets going, and for all intents and purposes, Ryback was also kind of like the first person eliminated. After all of that build-up, the last week or two at least of build, what is Ryback going to do? What team is Ryback going to be on? The Authority courted him, Cena courted him. They were starting to put all their muscle behind Ryback again, giving him a push. And he's eliminated like nobody at the beginning of the match, and he leaves, never to be seen or heard from again. I don't know if that's a sign that they've given up on him already or what. That's a very odd way, though, to get somebody over as being a big deal in that match and then get rid of him so quickly. So not surprising that he didn't get a great reaction on this show. Backstage, Vince McMahon met Triple H and Stephanie at the limo, said he was disappointed that he would have to spend Thanksgiving with the two of them. What a prick. Punk was right. He said they need to make this right, and they were left to wonder what Vince meant by that as they drove away. I wonder if that means Triple H jumped on his laptop at the hotel later on. Ambrose and Harper, Intercontinental title. Here's what bothered me about this. The match was good. I liked the match. I like both guys a lot. I think Harper's upside is huge. He's a great big man. Nothing was wrong with the match itself except that finish. What a horrendous finish to a 15-minute long match. This was not some 3 or 5 minute throwaway match where you would expect it to have a bullshit finish. This was a long, competitive, back-and-forth championship match. You cannot go 15 minutes and have a finish like that. I'm sorry. You can't do that. It's not good heat. It just pisses off your audience. Harper shoved Ambrose into the referee. Not even, like, overly hard, like the ref took a big bump out to the floor or something. He just, you know, he shoved Ambrose into the ref. Didn't knock him down or anything. But apparently this was enough for the referee to call for the bell. You can imagine how the fans in the building reacted to that. Crowd groaned and booed. They were not happy. I think Ambrose gave Harper dirty deeds onto a steel chair. I seem to remember that. But I know he started throwing chairs into the ring. He went outside. People just said, we want tables. So he went under the ring, dragged a ladder out, then he dragged the table out, and I think the table may have gotten the biggest pop on the entire show. I'm being completely serious right now. I think Daniel Bryan probably did, but the table was a close number two. If they ever decide to induct inanimate objects into the Hall of Fame, the table must go in first, and the Dudleys can do the induction. So before Ambrose could follow his weapons back into the ring, Bray Wyatt attacks him from behind, hurled him over the announce desk, he goes flying, and then he buries him in a pile of chairs as payback for what Ambrose did to him the night before, and to build to their TLC match on the pay-per-view. I thought that was good, but the ending of the match was just complete garbage. And they should be ashamed of themselves that they come up with such bullshit finishes like this. That's not the first time we've seen them do that either. What a shit finish to that match. That's all I have to say. Santino and Larry the Cable Guy, who was shirtless, wearing a Rey Mysterio mask. They did comedy to promote the movie that they're in, Jingle All the Way 2. I was a big fan of Jingle All the Way 1. I don't know if Jingle All the Way 2 can match the cheesy goodness of that first movie without Arnold. Here's my question about this. Do these segments actually sell any DVDs? I mean, wouldn't they just be better off airing commercials for the damn thing? I feel like these segments do more to get people not to watch their crappy movies and actually want to buy them. Larry the Cable Guy claimed he was a big fan. He was such a big wrestling fan that when Santino mentioned Randy Savage's name, Larry's response was, "Who?" He was making a joke, of course, but he said that he was once in a fight down in Florida with Savage, but he was referring to Fred Savage, who has not been relevant since the Wonder Years. Or I guess maybe since Molly 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 in the Austin Powers movie, if you get the reference. Gold and Stardust came out for their match. They interrupted all of this knee-slapping comedy, making them instant baby faces. They got their rematch with Miz and Mizdow for the tag team titles, which they lost at Survivor Series. Miz and Mizdow are the new tag team champions. Miz faked an injury in the match here. He laid on the outside for most of the match with, I think it was Dr. Amon, who was actually over there checking on him, no doubt asking him if he wanted a Z-Pack. He thought Miz did that maybe he broke his nose, I guess. He was holding his face. Can't damage the moneymaker. Mizdow worked virtually the entire match until Miz snuck in at the very end. He hit the skull-crushing finale and picked up the win for his team. And they do this gimmick now where Miz carries both tag team belts around with him, and Mizdow has two toy replica belts that he carries. So we went from comedy to comedy to more comedy, this time with Concessions Kane, who was scolded by a crazed female concessions manager who warned him that if he drops even one chip, it was coming out of his pay. I thought he was the director of food and beverage. Why is he taking instructions from this crazy woman? Lana and Rusev were out next to make their decision. Daniel Bryan popped up on the Titantron. He reminded them of the battle royal he'd have to defend his title in if he failed to go through with the Pledge of Allegiance, which made it all the more puzzling when Rusev failed to go through with it, yet was not forced to defend his title in a battle royal. Now, in fairness, they ended up doing it on SmackDown the next night, so I'll give them a pass, but that's all I was thinking of when the show was over. That was one of the things, anyway. Among many things I was thinking, I was like, boy, did Daniel Bryan look stupid for not forcing this guy in a battle royal. And actually, I will say this. Even though they did it on SmackDown the next night, if I was in the crowd that night for Raw, I'd be pissed. Because when Bryan first announced that, hey, you're going to have to defend that title in a battle royal against the whole roster, that actually got a pretty good pop. And they ended up screwing those fans over, and they gave it to the people in the building the next night. So out came Sergeant Slaughter, who coerced Lana into saying the Pledge of Allegiance, not Rusev. Lana, and she only did like the first part of it before Rusev cut her off and basically said, fuck this, we're not doing this. I actually wish he would have said it just like that. That would have been badass. Instead, he turned his attention to Slaughter. He threatened to beat him up until who should run out for the save but Jack Swagger. And between this and the laptop at the end of the show, I feel like I fell into a time warp or something. Like we're going backwards in time. Swagger went for the Patriot Lock. Rusev escaped. They did follow up with this on SmackDown. They had Rusev win a Battle Royal. I think Swagger is... I didn't see it yet, but I had read what happened. I think Swagger was the last one he eliminated. So it was like a... Hopefully it was just like a one-week angle. It was just contained to this 1 week. We do not need to see Rusev and Swagger again. I think they made it abundantly clear that Swagger cannot beat Rusev. He is a loser. He let his entire country down, and nobody cares. So hopefully they have new opponents in mind for Rusev and not the same old retreads. We then got more comedy with Kane, who was handing out food to an assembly line of little kids. He wasn't even charging him for the food. He was just giving it away. So psycho concession lady won't be happy. Santino was in line with Larry the Cable Geek and orders a hot dog, which results in Kane spraying him with mustard. Kane then calmly and very happily tells Larry that he's a big fan. So this was a step up from the earlier Kane segment. I got a chuckle out of this. The new and improved Fandango. I'd still love to know what's so improved about the guy. He got a new haircut. I guess that means he's new and improved. He beat Justin Gabriel in a rematch from the night before that nobody asked to see. He won with his leg drop off the top rope. It's just weird to me that the one thing about the guy that was still kind of over was his theme music, and they went and changed it. We then got Big Show, the turncoat that he is. He had knocked out John Cena the night before. Big Show, not Dolph Ziggler. Sheamus didn't make an appearance. It was the Big Show who turned heel in the Survivor Series match and left John Cena laying. So he comes out in a suit. Somebody on Reddit went and did the math, and they listed 32 different times that the Big Show has turned heel or babyface throughout. And I think this just covers his WWE career, not even WCW, where he turned a whole bunch of times. I think we're just talking WWE here, since 1999. Why anybody would trust this man to be on their team, I have no idea. 32 turns. Kane can't possibly be too far behind that. He said, "I'm not a bad person. I simply made a mistake at Survivor Series." And the people booed him, so he healed on them and then said he's been hearing that some guys in the locker room have been talking about me behind my back. Come on out and say it to my face. And you would think John Cena, of all people, would have something to say, seeing as how Big Show knocked him out and caused him to be pinned the night before by Seth Rollins. But instead, it was Eric Rowan who answered the call. Thank Christ, too, because I couldn't take another John Cena versus Big Show pay-per-view match. I was convinced that that's where this was heading. I wanted to pull my hair out. At least Rowan and Show is something different. I can't say it's going to be a great match, but it's different. It's a match and a feud that we have not seen before. I just wish they had not gone and blown that body slam spot in that tag team match a few months ago. I think it was the Wyatts against Big Show and Mark Henry. And Rowan he slammed Big Show like he was nothing, just in the middle of the match. You know, you shouldn't waste a spot like that in a throwaway tag team match on an episode of Raw. These two guys are probably going to have a pay-per-view match now at TLC, and that would have been a big spot. I mean, it still might be. You know, it wouldn't shock me to see him pick up the Big Show for a big body slam, and he gets a big pop, and they make a big deal about it. But I remember it. I remember that spot. I'm sure there's a lot of other people who remember it. You know, you shouldn't waste moments like that. Big Show tried to tell Rowan he's in over his head, go find your stuffed animal, all that kind of stuff. When Rowan said, "I hate bullies," and attacked the Big Show, dropped him with a spin kick, which was kind of impressive, and Big Show bailed at that point. There were actually some Eric Rowan chants from the crowd. "The guy hates bullies," he says. Yet, how many times did we see Eric Rowan and Luke Harper and Bray Wyatt beat up guys 3-on-1? I guess the guy has gone soft. Brie Bella and AJ Lee. AJ told her, "Lesbianist," which is a playoff their kiss the night before at Survivor Series. "You're an even bigger skank than your sister." See, AJ really is the female version of CM Punk. She's better on the mic than half the men on the roster, I think. Brie won with a roll-up off the distraction from Nikki. Unless there's a payoff to all this, and Brie ends up challenging Nikki for the championship, the two of them, it seems like they've reconciled all of their differences. Just like that, just poof, overnight. They seem to be, you know, great, friendly sisters yet again. And it just makes me think Brie has to have a plan here in this storyline. Has to. Otherwise, this makes no sense. AJ told them after the match that the two of them are half the woman she is and that talent is not sexually transmitted. Well, I think that's fairly obvious. Just look at Brian and Brie. They've been together for years now. Tyson Kidd and Natalya against Adam Rose and The Bunny, with Santino and Larry the Cable Geek on commentary. Cole called this an interspecies match, I flipped to the Ferguson stuff on CNN at this point. I had enough. Once he said that, I decided that that was it for me. I can't watch this match. I hear Tyson Kidd won, though, so good for him. He's on a roll. I also missed the New Day vignette that apparently said Kofi Biggie and Xavier Woods are debuting as a unit on Raw this Monday. Guess it didn't matter because they went and debuted them on SmackDown. On Black Friday, they debuted. How appropriate. They debuted as smiling baby faces. They beat Slater Gator and Curtis Axel in a six-man tag. I did watch the match. They were very, very over-the-top, dancing, clapping their hands together. The fans seemed to enjoy it. You know, the fans seemed to be having a good time. But I have to say, I would not count out the possibility that they are acting way over-the-top as baby faces as a way to shock us when they end up going heel. Maybe I'm reaching here, but I would not count out a possible heel turn in the very near future for these guys. And in fact, you know, I was thinking about this. They're going to be building a Brock Lesnar-John Cena rematch at the Royal Rumble for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. If they were going to turn these guys heel and, like, shock everybody, and they really wanted these three guys to make an impact, I just throw this out there as an idea. Why not tie it into, you know, the Cena-Brock Heyman stuff? Why not tie it in there? Maybe over the next few weeks, over the next month on Raw. You know, they're going to make their Raw debut, I assume, this Monday. That'll be their first Raw appearance. And so maybe in the weeks to come, they put together some six-man, eight-man tag team matches on Raw that have John Cena teaming up with them, or maybe Cena teams up with Big E and Kofi and Xavier's on the outside or something. Because we've seen them take, like, the Usos, for example, and do six-man tags with John Cena, and for a few weeks until they forget. It's like the Usos are these great, you know, friends with John Cena. John Cena's got a lot of friends. Now, we all know what happens when you are associated with John Cena as one of his friends. Things usually don't work out too well for you. But they've done this before, and so I almost think, like, it wouldn't be the worst idea in the world to really get these guys going, to associate them with Cena, right, the top star in the company, let them do some six-man or eight-man tags where they're partners, and then as part of the build to Cena-Brock at the Rumble, you know, 1 week, late December, early January, whatever, there's a match or a segment on Raw, and the New Day attack John Cena. And they turn on him, and there's Paul Heyman in the background laughing, yucking it up. It was all part of this plan. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, all three guys should be Paul Heyman guys. I mean, maybe you can do that. But they don't even have to be Heyman guys. It's just you tie them into that storyline. They attack John Cena. They're like hired guns for that night by Paul Heyman, who's laughing his ass off. But it's just a way to get them to the dark side. It's a way to turn them heel. It's just... just a brain fart, just an idea that I had if they wanted to go in that direction. We came back, or I came back, to the show after I had flipped it off, and I see Concessions Kane is having an encounter with Ryback, who demanded a protein shake. And Kane instead threw a hot dog in his face. That was unwise. Ryback attacked him with food, and then as Kane ran off, Ryback grabbed a bag of peanuts and told Kane, "Hey, you forgot your nuts!" That's funny. Anyway, the two of them will have a chairs match at TLC. Remember when John Cena used to tell his opponent to choke on D's nuts, and then he would throw a bag of peanuts at them and kick them in the balls before they could catch them? I just remembered that. Main event was John Cena and Dolph Ziggler against Seth Rollins, Joey Mercury, and Jamie Noble, who won the app vote, 93% of the vote. One of the few things I liked about this show was seeing Dolph Ziggler featured in the main event, back-to-back nights, and both nights the crowd reacted to him like he belonged there. It would be very easy for WWE to put somebody like him in the main event, and the people are just dead, because the guy's been so beaten down for so long, he's been in the mid-card for so long, they just can't take him seriously as a main event player, and I was really happy to see that the fans took to him like he was a main eventer right away. You know, there was no apathy. They weren't sitting on their hands. They bought into the near falls. He's a very sympathetic character, very easy to get behind. So that was cool. I hope this continues. You know, God knows they could use more fresh faces at the top of the card. Hopefully this isn't just, hey, we'll put Dolph in the main event for 2 weeks and then put him right back where he was before. The match was fine. It was cool to see Jamie Noble in there and all, but it was, you know, it was It wasn't a great match. I mean, it was a few levels below a usual Raw main event. We've gotten some real kick-ass matches in the past for Raw main events. This was more for comedy, I think, than anything else. Cena and Ziggler scored simultaneous pins on Mercury and Noble after hitting their moves. As Rollins backed his way up the ramp, he was leaving. Daniel Bryan came out, grabbed him, threw him back into the ring. Dolph Ziggler nailed him with a super kick. He went into an AA then from John Cena. So the baby faces stood tall when suddenly we heard a familiar noise. The fucking anonymous general manager ringtone. The camera pans out, and like magic, there just so happens to be a podium with a laptop next to the announcers. And Michael Cole gets up, he says, "I have received an email from the anonymous Raw general manager," and he proceeds to read from the laptop, saying, "This party is over. Next Monday will be Cyber Monday. Order and discipline will return next week to Monday Night Raw." And then to complete the troll job on the fans, they hit that dinging noise over and over and over again until our ears bled. I think that was Vince probably sitting in the back with his finger on the button, letting out all of his frustration on the fans who still haven't signed up for the network. That's how I like to visualize it. So they're rehashing a 2-year-old storyline for next week's show. I assume it is only for next week's show, and if that's the case, it's not that big of a deal. I'm not going to rant and rave about that, like, oh my god, the Raw GM, the anonymous Raw GM is back now for the long haul. It better fucking not be. I'm assuming it's for 1 week only, but my god, what a shit finish to this show. What a shit finish. On a night where they talked about a new era. This is the dawning of a new era. The authority is gone. It's a new Raw. It was the same recycled stuff. When the show is over, that was the impression they left you with. After all the goodwill they built up with that Survivor Series finish with Sting and Ziggler and all the positive things that had people very excited, how does the Raw end the night after with the anonymous Raw general manager laptop? I mean, are these people completely devoid of ideas? They must be. Again, why do we need a general manager? If you're doing Cyber Monday, here's my understanding of it. I think they're basically doing the old Cyber Sunday Taboo Tuesday voting gimmick that they used to do on pay-per-view. I think they're doing that next week, and that's fine. That's fine. The whole concept bombed on pay-per-view because people were not going to pay money for a show or going into it. They didn't really know hardly any of the matches. So it flopped, and that's why they ditched it. And I always said, like, as a TV gimmick every now and then, it's more suited, I think, as a television gimmick for Raw. So I don't have a problem with them doing that, but why do we need a general manager? If you're going to have a whole bunch of app votes, and you're going to tell people, go to the app, these are the match choices, and vote on the matches you want to see, why the fuck do we need a general manager? It's such a crutch that they just can't let go of. There has to be an authority figure, because that's how it's been since the Attitude Era. You know, there was actually a wrestling business pre-Attitude Era. I hate to break it to you. And wrestling wasn't all that bad back then. You did have authority figures. Don't get me wrong. There was always a president or, you know, Jack Tunney, Gorilla Monsoon, Roddy Piper. But there wasn't this reliance on it. Every week, every segment. And nothing is ever decided upon, apparently, before they go on the air. Very rarely. And I know they have 3 hours to kill. That's not our fault. Don't blame me. It's up to them to come up with ideas that are interesting and exciting and matches and come up with whatever you want. But don't just rehash the same stuff and rely on this authority figure general manager nonsense. Nobody cares. And for all you guys, by the way, on this anonymous Raw GM stuff who were tweeting me and emailing me pointing out that Hornswoggle was revealed as the anonymous Raw GM, how does this make any sense? I don't know why you're so surprised by the lack of logic here. Storyline continuity is like the fucking Loch Ness Monster in WWE. Every now and then, you think you see it. You'll read about somebody spotting it. But you can never really find any evidence of it. It's extremely rare. NXT this week opened with Tyler Breeze in a match with Marcus Louis. Louis Still comes to the ring with a towel on his head. He's ashamed to show his face. He's still bald, has no eyebrows. This is 2 months, by the way, after TakeOver. I want to know what kind of toxic shit was in that hair cream that Kaz and Enzo poured on this poor bastard. It wasn't really a match. Breeze just insulted him on the microphone, called him an uggo. Then he hit the beauty shot for the pin, and he left. And then Marcus Luis snapped afterwards, and the fans chanted, "This is awkward," as we faded to commercial. Speaking of Kaz and Enzo, they were out next to introduce Carmella, the Princess of Staten Island, and Carmella's opponent, back for more, it was old Blue Pants, Leva Bates. They don't mention her name, they just call her Blue Pants, and she's like mega over in that building. I mean, people were chanting Blue Pants before they even announced her, which blew my mind. No pun intended. They had a match. Carmella finished her off quickly with a pair of drop kicks and her head scissors submission, wrenching back on Leva's head for the tap out. Yeah, I watch Carmella. I mean, who doesn't want to watch Carmella? I watch Carmella, and the way she acts, the way she carries herself, the things she says, she's a tailor-made heel. She seems miscast right now. I just hope that that doesn't mean that, you know, they're going to end up turning the whole group heel, because that, I think, would be a big mistake. So hopefully that's not what happens, but I don't know, just an impression I had. The Lucha Dragons against Jason Jordan and Ty Dillinger non-title match. One of our PayPal donators here for the podcast, Hytham, the equalizer, he astutely pointed out to me that Jordan and Dillinger remind him a lot of Haas and Benjamin. And you know, I have to agree, and it goes beyond the fact that one's white and one's black. There's just something about them. I do see the similarities there. And I think if they keep them together as a team, and I hope they do, because I actually think there's potential there. They have some chemistry. If they end up having a career the way Haas and Benjamin did back when they were the world's greatest tag team, I think they'll have a pretty good run in WWE. It was a good match. It was meant to spotlight the tag team champions heading into TakeOver. Kalisto got the pin on Jason Jordan with his Salida del Sol finish. We then had a Kevin Owens video package. The first time that they have acknowledged this will be his name. This is Kevin Steen. He will be called Kevin Owens. It was him in the ring doing a bunch of moves at the Performance Center. They showed photos of his family, his wife, his kids. He said he fights to provide for them. Everything changes on December 11th. So that is when he is making his debut. That is also the date of the next TakeOver special. So they haven't announced if it'll be a match or if he'll just be there, which means he'll interfere, the main event. I mean, who knows? Could do anything with the guy. But he will be making an impact in some way, shape, or form on the 11th. I thought this package, by the way, was excellent. Bayley came out for a promo. Says that even though Charlotte said last week that Charlotte would not be here this week and warned Bayley not to come out alone, she wanted to because she wanted to confront her bullies, that being Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch. Sasha and Becky came out. They were pushing Bayley around a little bit. She ended up injuring her knee. And that was it. Not much to it. I mean, it certainly seemed like they were setting up for somebody to come down and make the save, even if Charlotte wasn't there, and nobody came out. They just pushed her around. She twisted her knee or whatever happened, and then the officials escorted Bayley out of the ring. But, you know, you watch this, and Bayley is so great in that role. She's like the female version of Sami Zayn or a female version of Daniel Bryan. You know, it's very easy to like. You just can't help but root for her. Backstage interview, one of the best parts of the show, with Tyson Kidd and Natalya before Kidd's match with Finn Balor. I'm sorry. Natty talked up her husband, just saying great things about him. And before she could finish, Tyson cut her off and said, "I'm standing right here. I can cut my own promo." Said that he's been training with his Uncle Brett, who Natty correctly pointed out was technically her Uncle Brett. But Tyson said, "He's my uncle, too." And then Natty went to hug her husband. And Tyson stopped her and asked if she had checked up on their cats. And he said, "I've got to go FaceTime with my cats before my match to make sure they're okay." And off he went. This was awesome. I love this. This was so fucking great. We had a Vaudevillains silent movie feature to build up their title match at TakeOver with the Lucha Dragons. It was like an old-fashioned, old-school silent movie. They didn't say a word. They had that classical music playing in the background, the old piano, Charlie Chaplin music. And you know, it was basically them like diffusing a bomb that the midget version of the Lucha Dragons, who they had beaten up a couple of weeks back. They were in there as well. I don't know what their WWE's fascination is with using little people in segments like this, but I actually thought this was great. This was the most entertained I have been by a vaudevillain segment since the act started. I liked this. This was well done. They even spliced in footage in there of Simon Gotch fighting a bear. I wonder if it was the old wrestling bear we used to hear so much about. And the main event, a dream match to some. Finn Balor and Tyson Kidd, one-on-one. Match ended by disqualification when the Ascension ran in, so that was a crap finish. Hideo Itami ran down to make the save. All four men brawl to end the show because a takeover it will be. Balor and Itami against the Ascension. The match itself was awesome. I would advise anybody who has access to the network and doesn't watch NXT or hasn't watched it yet, get on that and at least watch the main event. It was a great match, as you would expect, between the two of them. Not the kind of match you would see on like a New Japan show if the two of them were out there without handcuffs, you know, doing what they do best. These two guys, believe me, they were not showing their best stuff here, but they still went out there, had an awesome match, despite the finish. Well worth watching. So we have the TakeOver special coming up on December 11th. It is NXT TakeOver Revolution. They're trying to be cute with the name. It's the letter R, and then the word evolution. They pronounce it like R evolution. I pronounce it the way it's spelled, which is revolution, because the other way is stupid. And the card is Adrian Neville against Sami Zayn for the NXT Championship, title versus career. Sami said, if I can't win the big one, I don't deserve to be here. He will leave NXT. Charlotte and Sasha Banks for the NXT Women's Championship. The Lucha Dragons against the Vaudevillains for the NXT Tag Team titles. Finn Balor and Hideo Itami against the Ascension. Kevin Steen will make his NXT debut as Kevin Owens. And that's the card right now. I could see them adding in a Baron Corbin-Bull Dempsey match that they kind of sort of teased the week before. And plus, I think if you put Baron Corbin in there with Bull Dempsey, it's going to be a short match. I mean, the fucking thing will be over in like 30 seconds. You could fit it on there. So it would not shock me at all to see them add that match. I'm pumped. That seems to be the pattern whenever they have these specials. I'm always like, on paper, the card looks great. I'm pumped for it. I'm more excited for this than I was for Survivor Series going into it. I know the free month of WWE Network is over as of tonight, but I would highly recommend that if there was a month that you should pay $9.99 for the network, any month that they have one of these NXT specials, they have them quarterly, like four of them per year, that is a month well worth spending your money on. Plus, they have that Stone Cold Vince McMahon podcast that they're advertising that's going to be on the network live after Raw goes off the air this Monday, which, stemming from everything that's come out in the last few days, makes this podcast with Austin and Vince even more interesting. So I think if ever there was a month to just pay the $9.99, subscribe to the network, this is the month to do it, largely because of the NXT special. I cannot recommend them enough. And the best part is you could even go back on the network and watch all the other ones. I really do think that some of the best events of this year, and the year is almost over now, and I actually think that WrestleMania this year was the best WrestleMania in years and years. But that aside, I think when we look back on 2014, some of the best shows, top to bottom, that have been put out by any of the major promotions, and certainly in WWE, are going to be those NXT specials. And I don't know what that says about the product, the main product, as compared to what they're doing in developmental and how they're doing it, but I'm happy they are, and I would definitely recommend you go back and check them out. Thank you guys for taking time out of your day to listen to The Sound Off. I get questions from people asking, how can I support the podcast? Well, the best way to support the show is simple. Just keep listening each and every week. Keep spreading the word about it to friends and family and retweet or share links to the episodes on Twitter and Facebook. But beyond that, you can contribute by making a PayPal donation or by signing up for a free 30-day trial of the Audible.com service. Making a PayPal donation is simple. Just log on to thesolemonster.com and you'll see the PayPal donation box on the right-hand side of the page. Enter whatever amount you'd like and click the Make a Donation button. That's it. Or sign up for a free Audible trial by entering our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solemonster. From there, you can sign up free for 30 days, which helps us out. You get one free audiobook as part of your trial that you get to keep no matter what. You can browse through their library of over 150,000 titles. Listen to your books at home, on the commute to work, at the gym, whenever, wherever. Sign up at audibletrial.com/solemonster or visit thesolemonster.com to make a donation right now. And thank you for supporting The Sound Off. No Impact this week, but that doesn't mean we don't have any TNA news to talk about. TNA has announced that tickets will go on sale this Friday, December 5th, for three consecutive TV tapings, January 7th, 8th, and 9th. They are returning to the Manhattan Center in New York City for the first Destination America tapings. We're still not sure if Impact is going to still be airing on Wednesdays on Destination America. I would have to think it will be, but there's still been no confirmation of that. I assume that if they are sticking to Wednesdays, maybe that first Impact taping that Wednesday, the 7th, might air live. Actually, it'd probably be on like an hour or two tape delay. But we'll find out. But they are returning to New York City. They are returning to the Manhattan Center. And you can get tickets starting on Friday on Ticketmaster.com. I am planning on attending. I'm hoping to. So that is the plan. The other big news that has been floated, and I think this rumor, actually it was a report originally, I think, in the Wrestling Observer that's been picked up elsewhere, is that when Impact returns to TV on Destination America next month, or in January, I should say, that Josh Matthews will be the new play-by-play guy for Impact. He'll be the new voice of Impact with Taz, and Mike Tenay is out as the lead announcer. He is reportedly not leaving TNA. He may still have an on-air role with TNA in some way. I don't know if that means backstage interviewer. There's been a lot of talk that with the new TV deal, they're going to have more than just one television show, so maybe he would host a second program. I don't know. But it sounds like he's not going anywhere. If that's the case, it would seem to take his name out of the running for Jim Ross's broadcast partner for the January 4th Tokyo Dome New Japan show that's going to be airing on pay-per-view. Supposedly, he was a recommendation from JR. He was the first choice, but if he's under TNA contract, they can't use him. So that would seem, anyway, to take his name out of the running. But I like the move, and I don't like the move because, you know, Josh Matthews is such a great play-by-play wrestling announcer. I've heard him do play-by-play before. He was doing some of the secondary shows for WWE. He even filled in on Raw on occasion when they would do an angle. If, you know, Jerry Lawler got beat up or something, they would trot out Josh Matthews. There's the famous episode of Raw. I want to say it was one of the draft shows, and he was one of the multiple commentary teams that were out there, maybe the ECW one. And unfortunately, he suffered a nosebleed on the air. I think a lot of people remember that. He's good. I think Matthews is good. He's got the youth that they seem to like. I think in wrestling, it's always about youth more than anything else. To me, Mike Tenay was just completely played out. He had been the play-by-play guy for TNA, the face of TNA, since day one. You know, a lot of guys have come and gone. Don West came and went. They had Todd Kennelly, that play-by-play guy they brought in a few years ago when Hogan and Bischoff were running things. And I actually thought Todd Kennelly was pretty good. I liked him. I don't know why they got rid of him other than just budget cuts. But they needed to replace Mike Tenay. And it's not a knock on Tenay like he's a bad commentator. There's nothing special. There's nothing exciting. He's been there forever. I thought Tenay, personally, I think Tenay was at his best when he was the third wheel on Nitro and they would bring him in because Bobby Heenan and Tony Schiavone didn't know the names of any of the lucha moves. And he knew all the names of the moves, and he would give great background on these guys that came up from Mexico. That was when he was the best at what he did. And in TNA, he's just been there for so long, and I think part of it is the stain of TNA. You know, he's part of an era in TNA that just, there's nothing, there's no buzz, there's nothing exciting about it. So you had to get some new blood in there. And so Matthews is the guy they went with, and I like the move. I think it's a positive move, and it's, quite frankly, I think it's overdue. I think they should have made this move either with Matthews or somebody else a long time ago. And again, that's not a personal slight on Mike Tenay, but for God's sakes, get some new blood in there. Speaking of New Japan, I mentioned them before, they're going to be coming to the United States on AXS Television, AXS TV, starting next year. AXS is the former HDNet, which used to air Ring of Honor programming. What happens, they put a press release out announcing that they have acquired a 13-episode series from New Japan's library, Japan's largest professional wrestling promotion. The debut date is January 16th, 2015. I believe that's Friday night. Yeah, the series is airing on Friday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern. I think it's an hour long. And it runs for 13 weeks. They have 13 episodes that they're committed to. I was really excited about this when I first heard the news. And then I realized, A, I don't have access television through my provider. And B, not that this is a bad thing. There's still going to be a ton of great wrestling on there. But it's not first-run programming, meaning what they're airing are older shows. Now, they're not airing shows from like 5 years ago. They're airing content mostly from 2013, maybe some from earlier this year. I think on that debut episode, they're featuring the Hiroshi Tanahashi Kazuchika Okada match from last year's Wrestle Kingdom show, not the one coming up on this year's Wrestle Kingdom. So that'll be on the debut episode. That's a hell of a match, and that's a hell of a way to kick off your debut show by featuring that match. So that's something, if you've never seen it before, you definitely want to make sure you make time to watch that match. They have Josh Barnett, who is a former fighter in the UFC, and I believe he was also in New Japan. He's gone back and forth between MMA and pro wrestling. Josh Barnett and Mauro Ranallo, who will be the play-by-play guy, they are the announce team for the show. They are going to be the American broadcasters for the program, so there'll be American commentary on there. You know, any way to get New Japan into the American market, as far as I'm concerned, is a plus. I mean, I may not have the channel. I may not be able to watch it every single week, but a lot of people will be. And so any added exposure that the New Japan product can get, in my opinion, because I count myself a fan of New Japan, I've really become a very big fan of their product, and I've become familiar with a lot of the guys now where when I look at them, I can rattle off their name just by looking at them. Before, aside from a handful of guys, there were a bunch of kind of nameless, faceless guys to me. I just enjoyed the product. I didn't really know who anybody was. Now I know who a lot of the guys are, and I follow along in their feuds and their rivalries, and it's fun. And I think a lot of fans in this country, if they give it a chance and don't just dismiss it because it's not WWE and the Rock isn't on the show, if they give it a chance and they're real fans of wrestling, I think they'll enjoy it. So I think that's a great move on their part. And that leads into the final review of the week, which is Lucha Underground, Episode 5. I did watch it. I'm still watching it week to week, and the shows are still as good as they were weeks ago. We had the show open with backstage one of these segments with Conan and Dario Cueto. Conan was calling him out for having his boys attack Prince Puma last week. Prince Puma is Conan's guy. He is Conan's guy that he brought into Lucha Underground. He's building everything around Prince Puma, who, of course, is Ricochet. And he was not happy that Dario's thugs beat him up in the back last week. Cueto said, I wasn't involved. He denied all involvement. He said that Cortez and Cisco, they answered to Big Rick, not me. And Conan says, all right, well, why don't we do this then? Why don't we have, as the main event tonight, a Boyle Heights street fight between Prince Puma and Big Rick? And so they made the match, and that was the main event. And again, the interaction between Conan and Cueto was excellent. I love watching these two guys. Again, it feels like a movie, but they're so good. Conan is so awesome in his role, and Cueto, who's a real actor, obviously is very good at what he does. I would love to see the two of them in a movie together, quite frankly. First match was Mil Muertes with Katrina against Drago, who has this black jelly tongue. It's the only way I can describe it, and I have to say, it freaks me the fuck out whenever I see it. Every single time I see this guy, and that tongue comes, you know, like, it's like jelly or putty or something. I don't know what, if it's a prosthetic, I have no idea what it is. It just freaks me out every time I see it. I don't know if I'm the only one. King Cuerno watched this match while he was perched up on the balcony. He was watching. Mil Muertes gets the win with the flatliner. After the match, King Cuerno comes down from the balcony. He lays out Drago in the middle of the ring for good measure. I guess he's still bent out of shape about losing to him last week. We had a Johnny Mundo promo package. Says that he's gone by many names in his career. He's also dealt with the politics of wrestling before. An interesting week for somebody to refer to the politics of WWE. And anyway, Mundo says, now I'm here to fight. We had Son of Havoc with Ibelis against Masquerita Sagrada. So it was Son of Havoc against one of the minis. If you're not a fan of minis against, I don't want to say regular people. I mean, that's a shitty thing to say. I mean, more like taller people. Let's say if there's a minis division, he's now wrestling outside the minis division. If you're not a fan of that, if you're not a fan of man-on-female action, you probably did not like the show this week. All things said, you know, I have to say, this was a good match. You have to suspend your disbelief when you're watching something like this. But I thought the match itself was actually pretty good, and Sagrada got the win with a head scissors into a victory roll. The next match was Sexy Star against Chavo Guerrero, man-on-woman violence here on this show. Chavo pie-faced her hard at the start of the match. She goes for a shoulder tackle, but he yanks her down by her hair. What a prick. After a running hurricanrana that sends Chavo out to the floor, she grabbed the steel chair from the outside. She wanted to get revenge on Chavo for using that chair on her all those weeks ago. The referee stepped between them, said, "Don't do it! Don't do it!" And she kicked the referee right in the balls, threatened to hit Chavo with the chair until Pentagon Jr. ran down. He took the chair away from her. It looked like Pentagon and Chavo were about to gang up on her when out comes Phoenix, who does some pretty cool shit. That's what I call Phoenix's offense. That's my name for it. Pretty cool shit. It's a scientific name, of course. And he and Sexy Star stand tall together, so I smell a tag team match coming, maybe next week. Main event was Big Rick and Prince Puma in a Boyle Heights street fight. I thought, you know, again, big man, little man. Ricochet, as compared to Ezekiel Jackson, it's a mismatch. And Big Rick is so swelled up. He's a gigantic man. Big dude, not a very good wrestler, but he's got that presence where just looking at him, he looks like a badass motherfucker. That's really the best way I can describe this guy. And when he's out there, you know, on some weeks and he's got the cigar in his mouth and he's all dressed up, he looks like a badass guy. You just got to keep him out of the ring, that's all. So they have a match. Obviously, Prince Puma's flying around all over the place. He's fun to watch. Cisco and Cortez, who are Cueto's goons, they're out there. And Prince Puma takes him out at one point, does a dive out to the floor. There's like a big doggy pile, and he jumps on everybody. Somehow, Cortez got busted open. I didn't see how it happened, but he came up. He was bleeding. So, as they're interfering, Big Rick has a steel chair. He sets it up in the ring, and he sits down. He's taking a rest as the other guys are going after Prince Puma. And Puma fights him off. Then he drop kicks Rick right in the face. Rick falls backwards in the chair, hits the turnbuckles in the corner, and he grabs a kendo stick, Puma does. Hits Big Rick with it. Big mistake. That does nothing except piss off Big Rick. Rick grabs the stick, yanks Puma forward, and wipes him out with a short clothesline. Maybe it was a forearm. Whatever it was, he knocked the piss out of this guy. It looked awesome. I mean, he just killed him. Killed him dead. Looked completely devastating. They grab a ladder, and the goons do, and they bring it in the ring for Big Rick. They have the ladder set up in the corner, and Big Rick, he puts Prince Puma on it, but like now he's kind of laying upside down on the ladder in the corner, if you could visualize this. And they bring a table in the ring, and it just looks like bad times are coming for Prince Puma. All of a sudden, they go up to the balcony. They show us the balcony, and we see Johnny Mundo. And at this point, I'm like, uh-oh. What's this crazy bastard got in mind? Because, you know, he does the parkour stuff. He's always doing wacky, crazy stuff. But, I mean, he's up on the freaking balcony. I don't know how many feet it is, but he's pretty high up there. This fucking guy, he dives off the balcony into the ring. I thought he was going to dive on top of Big Rick, but I guess the risk there was too much. He could have killed the guy. But he jumped from the balcony all the way into the ring, landed on his feet. It's a miracle this guy didn't break both of his ankles. And just, he goes crazy. He's beating up all the heels. I mean, it was a spectacular thing to see. You gotta find it if you can online. And so Johnny Mundo grabs a chair, and I could already see where this is going. He's got the chair. Big Rick is trying to stagger up to his feet. Prince Puma, at the same time, is right behind him. He's staggering up to his feet. It's obvious what's about to happen. He winds up, swings the chair, Big Rick ducks, and he hits Prince Puma with the chair. Now, remember the story here is that Conan had told Prince Puma, stay away from Johnny Mundo, that guy is bad news, and so this will not help his case. The goons come in, they do a flapjack into a code breaker on Johnny Mundo, so that lays him out. Big Rick grabs Prince Puma, picks him up for a rock bottom, slams him through the table that was set up in the ring, and pins him 1-2-3. So Big Rick gets the win. There's now tension with Prince Puma and Johnny Mundo. I mean, we don't know how Prince Puma feels about it, but I'm sure Conan won't be very happy. And so they've set that story up going forward, and that's how they go off the air. So I thought, overall, another good episode of Lucha Underground. I enjoy the action, by and large, on the show. I enjoy the interplay with Conan and Cueto backstage. I always think that's very well done. Johnny Mundo is a madman for the balcony dive. Find it. You have to see it for yourself. And if you're not watching Lucha Underground, you're missing out. You're missing out on a good wrestling show. Again, if you don't have El Rey, I don't have the El Rey Network. It airs, where I am anyway, on Unimas. If you have the Unimas channel, every Saturday, 4 o'clock Eastern. Again, I don't know if it's like that throughout the country or if it's just here in New York. I would imagine it's everywhere. You can also find it online. Sometimes they'll actually post matches, like the best match of the week, on their official YouTube channel for the show. So definitely there are ways for you to find it. Check it out. I think you might like it. Let's move on to the mailbag. If you have questions, please email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. And please don't be offended if I haven't gotten back to you. If you've sent me a question really over the last 3 or 4 weeks and I haven't gotten back to you, I will get back to some people. Like, as certain questions come in, at that moment, if I'm free, I'll answer people. But there are a lot of questions I just haven't gotten to yet. And this has been a crazy week. So please bear with me. Do not be offended. Do not take offense if I have not used your question or gotten back to you yet. I assure you, I read everything, and I'm trying my best. But that is the email address. And I actually want to address something right off the bat. It's not one question from one person. I've gotten questions and tweets from a bunch of you people, and so I want to address this right now. Because it was another topic of conversation until Punk decided to speak. And that is AJ Styles, The Styles Clash, and Lionheart, who is an indie wrestler who competes over in the UK. He had his neck broken earlier this year, taking the Styles Clash the wrong way in a match with AJ when AJ came over there. And there have been some cross words between them, you know, some tension. I mean, AJ made some comments that were kind of disrespectful towards Lionheart in a podcast interview he did many months ago with Chris Jericho, and then Lionheart responded. It was a whole thing. But Lionheart went on his Facebook this week and posted a very long, respectful plea to AJ Styles for him to please stop using the Styles Clash, because a lot of people have now been hurt by the move. Yoshitatsu, most recently over in New Japan, he broke his neck. Found out he had 2 broken bones in his neck after taking the Styles Clash the wrong way. I saw footage of that match. If you search hard enough for it online, you'll find it. It's disgusting. I mean, it was a disgusting bump. So he broke his neck, and apparently he also came very close to being paralyzed. So that was a very serious situation. Lionheart, I mentioned him earlier this year. He broke his neck taking the move. Roderick Strong in a match in Ring of Honor. It was at one of the ROH TV tapings. And Roderick Strong is a very experienced performer. He took the move the wrong way. It seemed like it was his fault. He took the move the wrong way. Didn't break his neck, thank God, but he kind of rung his bell. It could have been a lot worse than it was. I just got a message from somebody earlier today, and I hadn't heard about this. I don't know if this is true or not, but somebody mentioned to me that apparently this week, in another match over in New Japan, that Satoshi Kojima may have been injured taking the Styles Clash from AJ Styles. Again, I'm just hearing that from one person. I don't know if that's true. But now there's been, you know, with or without Kojima on that list, there's a list of at least 3 or 4 different people this year alone who have been hurt, some cases very seriously hurt, taking the Styles Clash. I almost vaguely remember answering a question or addressing this a few months ago on the Sound Off. And I think at that time, I didn't like the idea, like, AJ should just stop using the move, because AJ has used this move for years. He's been using this move for over a decade. And in a lot of cases, if somebody takes the move wrong, from what I understand, I'm not a wrestler, but from what I understand and hearing other wrestlers talk about it, it usually is the fault of the person. They should know whether to tuck their head, don't tuck their head. There's a way to take that move the right way, and there's a stupid way to take that move. And at least some people have taken that move very stupidly. That's not AJ's fault. However, if you have 3, 4, 5 different people in the span of just this year alone who are getting very seriously injured taking this move, it is a dangerous maneuver. Something is going on. I don't know if it has anything to do with AJ Styles now. As he gets older now, he's doing, I mean, I don't know why he would be doing anything different. It's hard for me to reconcile what exactly is going on here. I don't like the idea of banning moves you know, and it's not WWE. AJ works in a lot of different places. It's not like they can just universally ban this wrestling move. I mean, I guess New Japan or Ring of Honor could come to him if they wanted to and say, listen, don't use that move anymore. But I'm not a fan of that. I don't think the move should be banned. I think if AJ is in there with somebody that he's comfortable with and the opponent is comfortable with him using that move, they should be free to use that move because he's used it now for over a decade. And I bet if you look at the body of his career, very few people have been hurt by this move. But clearly there's something in the drinking water here. Something's going on. So if I'm an AJ Styles, I am at least open to the idea of coming up with a different finish. Because we are talking people's health here. And there's at least some people who are, you know, against his using the move. It's a dangerous move. Again, I think it's really only dangerous if you take it the wrong way. I'll give you my personal opinion. I've never been a fan of the move. Just me talking. I've never seen what was so devastating about it. It doesn't, you know, it looks okay. There's nothing overly devastating to me about the Styles Clash and how it looks when you do it. It's almost like the guy is taking a belly flop in the middle of the ring. What's so bad about that? That's just my personal opinion. I never thought the move was anything special. So personally, if he comes up with a different finish, fine with me. I don't have any sort of allegiance to the move. And maybe he should. Maybe he should at least look into coming up and start using another finish, getting it over. You know, he's got another move, the Calf Killer, which is a brutal submission if you actually apply that to somebody. Maybe use the Calf Killer more often and really try to get that over as a vicious, dangerous finish and save the Styles Clash only for big-time matches, or maybe save it only for people that he's comfortable in the ring with and that somebody is comfortable taking it. But I don't think banning the move or requiring him to not use it anymore is the answer. I think that's the wrong thing to do. But clearly there's something going on here. I'm not quite sure what it is. But maybe just having another move on hand would be a wise move on his part. Caleb Knutson from Battle Creek, Michigan, with the Authority out of power in WWE, seemingly going with a Sting vs. Triple H match at WrestleMania. How do you feel about Sting being the anonymous Raw General Manager? He could stay hidden until February until he reveals himself as the GM, and then this would bring Triple H out of, I guess, retirement, wanting to get back control of the show. Personally, I want to see Sting versus Undertaker more, but if they're doing Sting Triple H, this is the route I would go. I disagree. I made my thoughts very clear about this anonymous general manager nonsense. I think it's bullshit. I think it's a one-week gimmick. Hopefully, it'll be one and done after Cyber Monday this week, and we won't have to hear about this Raw general manager anonymity crap ever again. I think it's a stupid angle. It was stupid when they did it. It's stupid that they brought it back. And they also paid it off, by the way. We're supposed to forget that Hornswoggle was the anonymous Raw GM. I think Sting should be kept as far away from this nonsense as possible. To me, it blows my mind that the same company that gave us that finish to Survivor Series, that great match, that great finish with Dolph Ziggler persevering and Sting's debut after all these years, the same company that gave us that outcome, 24 hours later, gave us that shit finish that we had last Monday night. It's amazing that it was the same company that came up with both of those finishes, back-to-back nights. Sting should have nothing to do with the anonymous Raw General Manager. Him becoming a GM at some point, I could see that. But, again, I'm biased. I think that just the notion of having a GM is so frickin' played out. I would keep Sting far away from that. You know, based on their own storyline, the only one who can bring Triple H back is John Cena. I can't wait to see how they work their way out of that one. So, however Triple H comes back, Cena's going to have some kind of involvement. Maybe Triple H starts doing things to make Sting's life a living hell. I don't know how he would do that, since Sting's not going to be on the show full-time anyway, so what's he going to do to Sting, unless he just comes out of the crowd and beats him up one week, and Sting goes to Cena and says, give me Triple H. I mean, maybe that's how they do it. But no, keep him away from this laptop crap. The idea that Sting would even be fiddling around with a fucking laptop somewhere is so ridiculous to me. Keep him away. David Menigo, the pride of Silver Spring, Maryland. That's not his name. That's my name for the guy. It's been a few years since Tammy Sitch, a.k.a. Sunny, got inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. Since then, her life has taken a downward turn. The latest news is that Sunny is selling herself on Skype. No disrespect to Chris Candido, but do you think Her life would have been better had she stayed with Shawn Michaels, or did HBK dodge a bullet? Well, first of all, HBK did dodge a bullet. That's for sure. That's number one. Number two, I think both of their lives may have ended prematurely had they stayed together. They were both fucking wrecks in the mid-90s. Are you kidding me? In the late 90s? The drugs that they were on? How fucking drugged up Shawn Michaels was back then, and then Tammy had her own substance abuse issues? You take two people who were on drugs and you put them together, it's a recipe for disaster. It's not like one day the two of them are going to be together and they're going to wake up and say, man, what are we doing with our lives? We got to quit cold turkey. No way. No way that would have happened. I think things would have ended badly for at least one, if not both of them. It's a great thing that things didn't work out between them. And I think in the end, for Sean, things turned out a lot better. Maybe not so much for Tammy, but I think both of them would have gone down a very dark road had they stayed together, because both of them clearly had issues that were not going to be fixed by the two of them being together. I think that would have been a disaster. David from Florida. How do you think Hulk Hogan will be remembered when he passes away? I think he should be remembered as the greatest attraction in the history of pro wrestling. Or do you feel all of the negative stuff, like the steroid scandal, Nick's car accident, and the sex tape, will overshadow his accomplishments? Well, all that stuff is going to be there. You can't ignore it. It's all part of the second half of the guy's life. But I think that at the end of the day, Hulk Hogan will be remembered as the most famous pro wrestler of all time. Period. End of story. That's it. And that includes The Rock. The Rock, you know, The Rock went on to have more success, a lot more success. You know, one of the biggest movie stars in the world. And he's known globally, although he's more so known globally for being a movie star now, not so much a wrestler. You have to remember, before he came back to WWE, he had been out of the game for like 7 or 8 years. So there's a whole generation, a whole group of people now who know The Rock, not for WWE. They know him for the Fast and the Furious movies and all the other movies that he's done. I just think at the end of the day, everyone knows who Hulk Hogan is. You know, everyone dresses up as Hulk Hogan. I don't see too many people dressing up as The Rock for Halloween, okay? Hogan is imitated, he is mocked, he is impersonated, he's a known entity, whether you are a wrestling fan or not. And a lot of people grew up on Hulk Hogan, a lot of people are wrestling fans today, count myself among them, because Hulkamania was such a big thing in the mid-80s. And it brought in a shit ton of people. And I think that's important to remember, because as much success as The Rock has had, The Rock, you know, maybe you could say this about Austin, maybe, but The Rock on his own didn't bring in people to wrestling the way Hogan did. You know, he didn't represent a whole era the way that Hogan did. He just didn't. So has he had a lot more success outside of wrestling? Absolutely. Hogan didn't exactly have a sterling movie career. But at the end of the day, Hulk Hogan will go down, whether you like him or not, as the most well-known pro wrestler of all time. That's it. Daniel from London. In its final years, WWE's brand split was at best deeply flawed. Two world titles watered down the champions, and a shallow roster of main event talent was spread too thin. It was rightfully ended a year ago, and I was one of those glad to see it go. But now NXT has become so successful, so different from Raw, that fans don't want wrestlers like Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville to step up to the main roster. They fear they'll be mishandled and lost in the shuffle. What's your opinion of reinstating a full, no-talent crossover brand split between SmackDown and Raw, with the Intercontinental title heading up a 90-minute version of SmackDown on Thursdays? Debuting NXT stars like Sami Zayn and Tyler Breeze alongside underused main roster talent like Cesaro and Sheamus. Really? Sheamus is underutilized? I disagree with that. With a bit of the old SmackDown 6 booking style could really help differentiate SmackDown from Raw and help build new stars before transferring them to Monday nights. I like your idea, but not with this company, because WWE does not know how to properly do a brand split. They did it for years, and they never did it right. You say a no-talent crossover brand split. I mean, in what world do you live in? I'm with you. I think that's a great idea. I just want to know what world you live in. I'd love to join you. It's never going to happen. Taking the Intercontinental title and putting that on SmackDown as the number one title, I mean, that would do a lot for the Intercontinental title. You need a secondary championship, though, on the main brand. I don't like the idea of having the U.S. title and the Intercontinental title around at the same time. So I would just unify them, have one Intercontinental title, and the Intercontinental title should be the secondary title. You could do it the way they kind of did it at first, which is have one world champion who can travel back and forth to both brands instead of having one dedicated top champion for both. I might actually like that idea a little bit more. That really makes the world title feel special and prestigious if the champion can appear on both shows. And the other thing I agree with you on is I feel the same way. I mean, I do worry about what's going to happen to Zayn, what's going to happen to Neville when they get called up. Tyler Breeze, I'm a big fan of his. I think he's a good worker. I like the gimmick. But, you know, even I accept the fact that when and if he finally gets called up to the main roster, he's going to be a mid-card comedy gimmick. You know, that's what he's going to be. So do I think that a lot of these NXT guys, do I wish they would stay on NXT selfishly? You bet your ass I do. I'm worried. Look at someone like Emma. Emma is a really good wrestler. She may be a shitty dancer. You may not like the character, but she can fucking work. They've done nothing with her. And then she had the little fiasco where she shoplifted and everyone made fun of her and WWE fired her, then they unfired her. And I was happy to see her at Survivor Series, but I know that it was nothing, it had nothing to do with them pushing Emma. They just needed bodies out there. I still think it was cool that she got the shot and she had some time in the ring with Paige. I still think Paige and Emma could be, you know, what Trish and Lita once was. It could be. I mean, don't laugh. It could be. All you got to do is give her a chance. She's a really good worker, and they've done nothing. They've completely killed her. She was on NXT a few weeks ago. The people there used to go crazy for her and for her intro and her music and her dance. They were dead. You had a few people who were doing the Emma dance. Nobody cared because they killed her. They killed the gimmick. And that's just one woman. Imagine some of these other guys who are not the biggest guys in the world, and Vince McMahon gets a hold of him and looks at him for the first time, and he's like, what's so special about this guy? You know, Paul, you've been wasting your time with these guys. Because at least Triple H is bringing these guys in, he's giving them a shot. They get to Raw, and it's a completely different ballgame. And I don't buy into the fact that it exposes that these people aren't good enough. I don't buy that for a second. I mean, the guys that they're pushing hard right now, like Neville and Zayn, they're fucking great. They can hang with anybody on that main roster right now, but you got to give them a shot. Now, I think Sami Zayn is going to end up doing just fine. I just feel like he's too good to just fail and be wasted and for them not to do anything with him. So I have confidence that when he makes it to the main roster, he may have to go through a lot of shit for those first couple of years, but I think in the end he's going to be a big star on the main roster. I wish I could say the same about everybody else, but I don't have that confidence. So I'm with you. I'm one of those people who is hesitant to see anybody get promoted to the main roster. I almost wish they would just stay on NXT and make the NXT brand bigger. Doing a brand split and making SmackDown almost like a version of NXT and mix in some guys like Cesaro or Barrett or people they may not be doing anything with. Like you said, the old SmackDown 6 style of booking that Heyman was doing back in 2002-03 when he was the writer on SmackDown. I like the idea a lot. It's just, do you trust these people to pull that off? Not in this lifetime. Noel Mercado from the Bronx. Through 2014, which moment in WWE shocked you the most? The debut of Sting or Brock Lesnar ending the Undertaker streak? Brock ending the streak. I mean, it's not even close. Not even close. Easily, Lesnar breaking the streak. Marbley from Chicago. Now that Sting has debuted for WWE, who do you see as the biggest star to never work for Vince McMahon? Bruiser Brody. I think Bruiser Brody. And I think that Brody against Hulk Hogan on top would have been a big match. Brody, he did, I want to say he worked for Vince McMahon's father. So technically he was in the WWF, probably back when it was the WWWF, but he never worked for Vince Jr. Pete from Union City, New Jersey, in your opinion, what is the most devastating tag team finisher you have ever seen? The Beverly Brothers, the Shaker Heights Spike. YouTube it, you'll see what I mean. Robert from Kissimmee, Florida, I've often wondered about the rationale for the kayfabe fearlessness of Mean Gene Okerlund's character. He always got away with berating and insulting the heels and never took a hit for it. I recall him telling Jake Roberts, "You make me sick," and saying to the Natural Disasters, "You stuck your nose in where it didn't belong," and calling the Colossal Connection the Colostomy Connection. That was kind of funny. among other things, and he always got away with it. When surrounded by the angry trio of Paul Orndorff, Roddy Piper, and Cowboy Bob Orton, who were upset because he'd interrupted their workout, Okerlund defiantly responded, "You can't intimidate me." Instead of hitting him, they just escorted him from the gym and beat up a random passerby instead. Other interviewers have taken a bump for much less and often seemed intimidated by the heels. Even Jim Ross took a few stunners. Jim Ross took a lot of shit. But Okerlund never showed any fear of the wrestlers at all. Do you know if there was a reason they chose to make him the only announcer who could tell off the heels without taking a bump for it? I have no idea. I don't know if it was something that he had in his contract, that he couldn't take any physical bumps. I know in the mid-80s, he did some mixed tag matches with Hogan against, was it Mr. Fuji and somebody else? I can't remember who. So he actually did wrestle a few times, but yeah, I mean, now that you mention it, I grew up on Mean Gene, not in the AWA, I grew up on him in the WWF, and then he had the later years in WCW. I can't remember him ever taking like a real bump. And he did. He actually would talk shit. I mean, remember that famous interview after Ric Flair won the Royal Rumble and someone's off camera. He's like, "Put that cigarette out." I'd love to know the story behind that, by the way. But yeah, he was always, you know what? I like that. I wish more announcers would be like that. Everybody now is a pussy. Everybody now is a pussy and they ask shitty questions. Mean Gene actually asked questions that mattered. He would stand up to people. He would get in their face. He wouldn't back down from them. I respect that. I wish we had more characters, announcer characters, that were like that. You know, not to make the heels look like shit, but just stand up for yourself. Show some balls. That's what I liked about the Mean Gene character. He never seemed to care. He didn't let it bother him. And if he happened to be doing an interview at a certain SummerSlam and a sign fell behind him, he would turn around and say, "Fuck it." You can't find too many people who would be willing to do that. Cole from Philadelphia. "So I tend to hear wrestlers utter the phrase, 'This is wrestling, not ballet.' I guess they say that to show how tough they are, and I used to agree until my sister took up ballet last year, and I realized, holy shit, ballet is just like wrestling. From the storytelling to the flashy costumes to the politics and wanting these dancers to look a certain way or be a certain size. Hell, in that world, the dancers even work through injuries so they don't get pushed down the card. Are there similarities between the two, or am I just reaching?" Well, did you ever see the movie Black Swan? Well, I didn't, but I heard it was pretty good. That probably gives you a sense of how intense ballet can be. I've heard similar stories about the level of competition and the politics and definitely injuries. People definitely get hurt. Ballet dancers get hurt all the time. Chris Jericho, in his new book, talked about how much pain he was in when he first started Dancing with the Stars. How intense it was, and he said it was the toughest thing he had ever done, even tougher than pro wrestling. Dancing is no joke. So no, I don't think you're exaggerating at all. This week's sad tweet comes from @PrinceCGR, which is the personal Twitter account, apparently, for Cody Rhodes. Seems legit. I think it's been retweeted by his wife, Eden, before. On Friday night, he posted a tweet saying, "Things I'm learning about the internet. You don't have to make it in the sport of pro wrestling to have a podcast about it." Now, this would have been the day after the Colt Cabana podcast with Punk dropped. So somebody tweeted and they tagged Colt Cabana in the tweet saying, "Oh, like shots fired or something." And Colt Cabana responded, "What's make it? Made a full-time living for the past 15 years? Japan, Europe, house, car, savings? That's pretty good, right?" And then Cody denied that it was in reference to Cabana. He even claimed that he doesn't even know who Colt Cabana is. He doesn't know who that guy is, he said. And then he was joking with Sam Roberts. Sam Roberts was like, "Oh, are you talking about me?" And Cody was joking with him and saying, "Ah, never, not you, or not the guy people think that tweet was about, but I am enjoying seeing a bunch of UK fans tell me that they can beat me up." So anyway, that's what he claims now. The timing of the tweet speaks volumes. You know, you post a passive-aggressive tweet about something that bothers you, and then you claim, "Oh, well, I wasn't referring to that person." And maybe he wasn't. Maybe he wasn't referring to Colt Cabana, but the timing is suspicious. And even if he wasn't, who was he referring to? I assume then that he must have been referring to all the other podcasts that are out. There's a million wrestling podcasts who were talking about nothing but the Punk stuff. So obviously he was either talking about Cabana, which would have been stupid, or he's talking about podcasts like this one and all the million other ones that are out there that talk pro wrestling every single week. And he can backtrack all he wants to. It was a stupid, disrespectful thing to say. It was just a stupid thing to say. I mean, that would be like saying, if you watch football, and sports talk radio is a big deal. A lot of people, a lot of you guys probably listening right now, listen to sports talk radio every single week. There's a show here in New York. I don't know if it's syndicated all over the place. The Boomer and Carton Show. Okay, Boomer Esiason used to play football. That's like saying, I'll listen to Boomer Esiason because he actually played the game. But all these other people like Chris Mad Dog Russo or Mike Francesa or Michael Kay or, you know, name your popular local sports host. If they never laced up a pair of cleats and played the game of football, then their opinion is invalid. They don't have a right to have a show. That is complete and utter bullshit. Give me a fucking break. So whoever it was in reference to, it was a stupid thing for him to say. He can believe it if he wants to, but it's just very short-sighted. And to me, the timing of the tweet being what it was, it just comes off as passive-aggressive bullshit. If you feel strongly about something, which I think is kind of what he's hinting at, then just come out and have the balls to say it, or just don't say anything at all. You can't post that tweet and then have a million people say, oh, he must be talking about Colt Cabana, and then be like, oh, well, no, I wasn't talking about him. He knew what he was doing. So that's this week's sad tweet. Really dumb from Cody Rhodes, who I like. So that was disappointing to see him tweet that out to the world. And if you have suggestions for sad tweet, you can always let me know. You can recommend it to me. Let me know on Twitter, @Solomonster, and I may use it on the show. Don't forget to nominate the Sound Off in the 2015 Wrestling Radio Awards. Go to WrestlingRadioAwards.com. You can put the podcast name in the first field with a link to our URL, pick your favorite interview of the year from any podcast in the second field. You have to fill in both fields. And you can vote every single day. I have no idea when the nomination period ends, so just keep voting and get your friends to vote as well. Also, you can like our fan page on Facebook. We have a fan page. If you like that page, you can then apply for membership to our private discussion group on Facebook. You will not get in unless you have already liked the fan page. I will be made aware of it, and then I can let you into the group, so be sure to do that. We've got a whole flurry of new activity, of new videos up on our YouTube page. Now is the best time to head over there, hit the subscribe button, so that way anytime a new video goes up, you will be notified of it. YouTube.com/TheSolomonster. Hit that subscribe button. We've got, just this week alone, two brand new Sound Off extras, one of which was my full Survivor Series pay-per-view review. The other was a full review of Chris Jericho's new book, The Best in the World at What? I Have No Idea, which has been well-received. I also posted the last episode of the Sound Off from yesterday, the CM Punk story. Episode 356 of the Sound Off is not only in iTunes and Stitcher and through Podbean, it's also up in full, a rare full Sound Off posted on our YouTube channel. So if there are friends that you may have who are wrestling fans, who are not fans of the Sound Off, have never heard an episode of the Sound Off before, if they're looking to hear more about the CM Punk stuff, that would be something great to share with them. So by all means, spread that link around, let people know, let's bring in some new listeners to the show. Any help you could offer in that way is certainly much appreciated. You can always make a PayPal donation to the show on thesolomonster.com, as many of you have this past week. Use our Audible link, audibletrial.com/solomonster, free for 30 days. Get yourself a free audiobook and buy a shirt in our Pro Wrestling Tee store, prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. There's still a few hours left to take advantage of that 20% off discount for Black Friday. Use the code Black Friday, and you get 20% off each shirt, including the new Let Me School You Son shirt. So that's going to wrap up episode 357. I am all audioed out for this week. I very much appreciate your support. Thank you for all the positive feedback. Keep it coming. And we will do it all over again next week, episode 358 of The Sound Off. Punk's going to be back on Colt Cabana's podcast answering fan questions this week. So I have a suspicion that there may be more to talk about next week on that story. If so, we'll cover it on episode 358. I got you covered, so don't worry about it. Until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week, and we will see you in the month of December for more Sound Offs. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solid Monster sounds off.
If we get another John Cena versus Randy Orton match, so help me God, I will put a voodoo curse on everybody in that company. And if you think I'm joking, just try me. I have my little voodoo doll I bought when I was in New Orleans for WrestleMania. I'm looking at it right now across the room. It's right over there. It's got a white pin for good luck and a black pin for evil. Don't make me go black on your ass.
Since 2007, The Solid Monster Sounds Off. Available at thesolidmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.